welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Ho, 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 Mr. Edwards, how are we doing?
Very good, Scott, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much, I'm good.
Are you cold?
No, I broke about 3 weeks ago, so I've gone to the dark side and turned the heating on.
Yeah, that sounds cold. Very pricey.
I don't do cold. Well, I think I'm trying to work out, I put on about half as much as normal, so I'm guessing if the bill's twice expensive, it should balance out about par, but I probably got that wrong. I'm sure the energy provider will sting her somewhere.
Yeah, of course they will. I'm trying to rein in how much heating. I've got like four layers of clothes on. I've got my body warmer on. I've got a blanket over my legs. I'm ready to go. My cold water's It's properly cold in my cold water. Properly cold.
Oh dear, yeah. Well, let's not get into politics. All the joys of there's no good news. I'll stop watching the news. Two things I've changed this year. I've discovered soup, so I'm eating soup. I don't know why, but that warms me up, so that's quite good.
And homemade soup or not?
No, I walked to buy it from the shop. Oh, okay. That counts, but no, not homemade. No, I'm not there yet. But it's all right, a bit of soup and bread. It warms you up.
You can't beat it. Especially when it's homemade. But yeah, but the rest of it you can't beat as well.
There's my first top tip, funnily enough. So segue into today.
I can't beat that one. I can't beat that one.
Let's call it a day. We're done. All right. So look, we'll have a chat first. But just to set the scene for the podcast, I think we want to do a bit of a Christmas fun one, didn't we? That was the idea. We said the fact that we've been doing this grassroots coaching malarkey for a few years now, we must have one or two tips we can share at least between us, is the hope. So we thought we'd turn it into a competition, obviously a Christmas fun competition. So, you know, there'll be no massive forfeits or big prizes, but
it's going to be competitive though, right?
It'll be competitive. Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to win, obviously, because I can edit it. So,
but hold on, that's a good point. Yeah, does the result matter though? That's the question.
It always matters when there's not kids involved.
we might come back to that point, but anyway, let's carry on.
Well, this is the plan, and tell me if you think it's going to work or not. We had a bit of thought, didn't we, before we've come on to list down maybe half dozen or so things that we think would be top tips for coaches maybe just starting off. So if you got a coach and you're like, it's their first, they're about to take on a team, you know, I'm going to guess like a younger team rather than an old team, but it doesn't actually matter, but take on a team, what would you say to them as some of the golden nuggets that you might think are best? And the idea being that you'll say one and explain it for a minute or two, I'll say one, explain it for a minute or two, and then we'll agree who's trumped two on that one, and then we'll rotate around and we'll see who wins at the end. Is that the game?
I like it. Sounds good. Yep.
How have you prepared for this this festive competition?
Well, a couple of ways. One, I've made a list of things I've got, just in case there's overlap, because I expect there will be some overlap in our top tips. I've got an exhaustive list of different areas that I can cover off.
102 top tips, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. I've been thinking about it long and hard. But more importantly, I listened to our first ever podcast, which was
episode one,
January 2019. And it was on the 10 ingredients to make an effective training session.
Okay. So you've stolen those 10 tips, basically, and that's sure.
There may be one or two. To be honest, what was interesting, there was a few on there. I think one or two that I thought were really important back then, maybe are not on my list now, really, which was, a lot of it was around the opposed versus unopposed piece, which I know you had strong views on and I had other strong views on it, but I think my views have changed a little bit on that. But it was an interesting listen, actually. A little bit amateurish. Yeah, a little bit dry, a little bit amateurish at times, but it was the start, right? It was the start of the journey.
We discovered ourselves on the journey, didn't we? I don't know what it's at, maybe 8,000 downloads. I don't know. It's obviously the first one gets the most. So we didn't scare everybody off after episode one. We could re-record it like and actually just go over it again as an episode one, maybe do it for like 100th and maybe revisit it. Well, let's see how this one goes, and then if we cover that ground maybe anyway.
You may not invite me back after this, to be honest.
That's true. Well, if you win, you won't be getting back on. You better blow one or two at least so I can win and save some face. All right. So look, there's no criteria, right? We have to just put them out there. And the truth is that they might both be very, very good or both be very awful. But actually, you just got to agree on that one, what the best one might be. So I figure, like, if you're happy to go first, because that's, you know, you're the guest, so you can go first. And then I will try and pick one that's either, I guess, similar or very different. Jimmy, I don't know. We can see, can't we? You know, or if I've got one, that's very, very similar, then I'll just add my bit to your one and pick another one and vice versa. But we'll just do that. And then maybe people who listen to this at some point can say actually if they agree with who won or who didn't win, or if we agree with the top tips. But all right, we've got a plan. Happy?
I'm happy. I'm ready to go. Yep.
All right. We haven't spoken generally about kind of coaching more broadly. Maybe we'll get through this and we'll see if we've got time for that towards the end.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
All right, mate. All right. Okay, well, from your list of 102 top tips, what are you going to put out? Are you going large first? Are you going for your glory one first? Or are you going to hold something back, or are you going out there all guns blazing?
No, I'm going straight in with a big one. And the first one is positive environment.
Okay. Damn you, Mark.
Which is first. That's on your list, I'm sure. Yeah. Like this is a huge one, a real huge one, and I think it's one that's a real make or break for creating a good experience for the children or the boys or the girls or the even the adults that you create. Right, having that positive environment is just critical. To give them that good experience of playing football. But secondly, to aid their development as well. So for me, a positive environment is things like being fun. The session needs to be fun. I think if you create a session which you find boring, either doing as a coach or you would find boring participating in, I think that's a cross off straight away. But more importantly, I think it's having that environment where people are not afraid to make mistakes. Boys and girls are not afraid to make mistakes. They're happy to try new things. They're happy to try different skills in that environment or try different things. Maybe it doesn't work, and maybe you can give kind of constructive feedback or ask the question around what they were trying to achieve or what the aim was. But it's like having that positive environment. It's just so important, and there's so many different aspects of that, from what I've said there to the meet and greet when your players arrive, having that kind of interaction when they first arrive, having that interaction when they leave, just creating a real buzz and a positive environment.
Oh, you've gone big early there, haven't you? You've gone straight in. It's fair play. Yep.
I thought you might say it, so I thought I need to get in there first of all, because that might be on your list.
Hit the back of the net first. No, you're dead right. So a couple of things then. Obviously I had something very much similar to that, and you're dead right to bring it up. It would be foolish if we didn't have that as one of our top tips, definitely. So questions for you then on that one, I guess. First question is, what about things like core values and behaviours? Does that help create those environments? Is it something you think are important?
Definitely, yeah, and I had that as a separate item actually on my 102 different things, and one of my important ones as well. But look, yeah, 100%, like having those core values and behaviours in place, so like the boys and girls know what is the kind of starting point, or what is acceptable, what's kind of not acceptable. I think it's just important, and I know you've mentioned these kind of core values on many of the podcasts, and we spoke about them before. And to be fair, you created these for our little grassroots club that we're involved in. So we've got respect, effort, and fun, which is obviously REF. And we use those. You've introduced them for the under 11s at under 6, and we've used them all the way through. And we've kept them in place. And it's just a reference point to go back to. Really important that helps you keep that environment right. Yeah, really important.
And then, Mark, look, maybe this was part of the idea, but I think it's a good question to ask in relation to that. It all sounds great, right? No one's going to say, oh, no, an environment's not important. It shouldn't be fun and positive. Everyone says that. So let's be honest. What about when you've got to deal with challenging things? What about when you've got players that maybe aren't stepping up, or, you know, not listening or not concentrating maybe, or you've actually just got to push the players out of the comfort zone a little bit? How do you manage to maintain a positive environment but also do the bumpy stuff as well? Because the bump's part of the journey, isn't it? It has to be for development. How do you manage that?
Yeah, it's a good question, and you get that as a coach, that you get that a lot, right? And kind of a lot of the sessions that you're in, that I think one of the things is having those core values in place that you can refer back to is important. So certainly around things like if the effort isn't there, then you can refer back to the core value to talk about effort and the fun side of things. That's really important. But also I think like being honest with the players, right, and telling them what is kind of acceptable, what's not acceptable, done in the right way, and try to do it in a positive way if you can, as but having those honest discussions. And I think the players respect you more for that than not having those discussions and letting things kind of go on that doesn't fit with what your core values or your behaviors. I think that's an important part.
Yeah, brilliant. All right. So your number one is obviously about creating the right environment. Okay, I'm not ever going to tell you what I think, but I'm gonna give one then that I think is kind of along the similar part of it, but different. Okay, so I might concede defeat in the first round, but let's see. But I'm gonna throw one out there anyway. So I'm gonna go against create the environment with don't take it too seriously. And keep it fun for you. Okay. So I can't argue about the environment stuff. I definitely think that's essential. But also I do think, it's easy to get overly involved in this world, this crazy world of grassroots football coaching, and become a bit obsessed with it. It's a bit like a drug, isn't it? It's like, and I would imagine, I'm not a neuroscientist, but I would imagine the chemical kind of reactions that happen in the brain on match days and training, it's similar to probably taking drugs. So you get the highs and the lows, right? And it can be a bit like addictive. And a danger with that is you can become obsessed with it and it can come too much. And then suddenly it's not fun anymore. And you find yourself in situations where you either don't act like you want to act or you're just not enjoying it and that kind of thing. So, and I guess that what I'm differentiating this one from your one is your one I think is right and it's very important. And it's about like everybody in some ways, particularly the team and the environment. This is more about you as the coach. Don't take it too seriously. You keep it fun for you. Do the right things, but actually, just remember that, for most of us it's a hobby. But even if it's your career, if it's not fun anymore, it's going to burn out at some point. So you've got to get that balance right. And I would suggest things like, taking time out, having breaks, even though it's hard sometimes, away from it a little bit, miss it a little bit. And have, if it is a hobby or a career, have something else as well, like to distract your mind a little bit. Do you mean that can just be something else to focus that doesn't become all encompassing? So I'm pitching, keep it fun for you, don't too seriously, against the whole environment one. So
All right. So let me ask you a couple of questions if I
okay.
can then. Because I think this is a great one. This is a great one. And I do think that social media has a lot of benefits, but I also think it doesn't help this part of keeping it or keeping it
You
fun kind of
can't
thing.
switch off, can you?
Can't switch off, especially now, like we've used VO right for a lot of our games. And in the end, you kind of like sometimes that VO is available later that night after the game. You kind of spend time watching it, or the next day you watch it, and you kind of like you just don't switch off. You're thinking about it all the time. But anyway, just coming back to the question. How do you? Because obviously you're involved with the grassroots side. You run your kind of private kind of academy for. I think that's the right way to describe it. How do you kind of get away from it all then? Plus you've got two boys that play football, so you're also watching them play. So it's kind of spread across the week quite heavily. How do you get a break, or how do you get away from what kind of things do you do?
Well, look, that's exactly, isn't it? I think it can almost creep out on you, can't it? Too much, where you don't even know you're immersed in it, really. And you're suddenly sinking before you realize you're sinking. So, I think when you get in that situation where it's almost you're surrounded by it, or you have to make conscious efforts to make sure that you get your time away from it, So, certainly school holiday times, as a family, we've reflected on that a little bit and said, you know what? No, let's do everything else apart from kick a freaking ball around. Let's just take a step away. It's hard, right? But you do that. I think having slightly different hobbies away from football, so something else you can get into that you want to learn and do something. So, go and get a guitar, do some Spanish, whatever you might want to do. Just do something that's like just something to work on that, it doesn't mean that it's either your full-time job or it's coaching. You have something else there as well that's a bit different. And one thing I think has really helped us out as a family again, I think more recently, is And I spoke about it a lot, and I'm good at speaking about things, but not actually doing not practicing what I preach. But thinking about doing different sports and looking at different things, because of the boys have got into some slightly different sports, which has made me go and just be a dad because I can't do these sports at all. So I'm watching, observing. So even then, I'm thinking, there's some good coaching points there I can take back to using to football. But at least it's not me, right? I'm sitting there. We're not having a conversation about the stuff. I'm not the drive home dad in those situations because it's not a football related thing. So I can just listen, watch, and enjoy it for what it is. And it's really helped. So look, it doesn't necessarily help me become a better coach or the boys become better football players like directly. But what it does do is it helps me enjoy coaching more, and it helps the kids enjoy their football more, which ultimately probably does help become better, in the longer term. So yeah, and it's all horses for courses. So everyone's, got different stretch levels, haven't they? And where it gets too much. But I think, just being conscious of how serious you're taking it and whether or not you need to think about, actually, can I just chew a little bit and find some space for me? Yeah. What about you? What do you do? How do you manage that?
Yeah, it's probably not very well, if I'll be perfectly honest.
You're the same, right? You've got a similar situation. Everyone's in clubs where you put a lot of hours into this in different ways, not just on the grass, but off the grass as well.
Yeah, it is very hard. It's very hard. And it's something which from January onwards is something that I'm trying to think about how I can manage it better, because especially when you're planning for sessions, you're planning for the weekend matches, you're going to watch your son's play, you're looking at things on social media, ideas on social media, you're reading up about things, you're going to watch QPR play on a Saturday, which is not relaxing.
That's not football though, we don't count that. That's the way from football, right? That's your break, is it?
that's definitely not a break, that's for sure. You kind of get quite overwhelmed when you get kind of, it's just so much going on. So I don't manage it very well, to be honest with you. And it's something I definitely need to work on. I think we've just got a puppy, as you know.
That's a hobby. That's, I bet that's helped, right? I know it's it has, basic, but that's got to have helped, right? It's a distraction, a good one, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a distraction, that's for sure. And it is a nice one, yeah. And even like just going out for a walk for an hour or 45 minutes with a puppy, we can't take it that far. It's good. I don't put on any podcasts to listen to when I go for a walk. I literally just go for a walk, so it's good. And doing things like running, I go running and things like that. So that all helps. And I try not to listen to podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts when I go running, but I try not to do that now, either music or nothing at all. So, but it is very difficult. That's for sure. As I said, with the things like VO now, where you're watching videos back, and then I try to watch some of it back with my son to show him a few bits and pieces from the match as well. And then you might take clips to send to the parents of some things that the boys have done really well. You kind of get dragged in. It almost becomes a full-time job.
Exactly that.
But
all right. Well, that's round one. Okay, so we've got the environment against don't take it too seriously. And I hope they're both two good tips, right? But ultimately, we've got to choose a winner. I'll save you the hard work, Mark. I don't think you can argue over the environment ones being one of the most important things out there. However much we might have a close second place in my one, I'm going to concede defeat on round one to you and give you the
1-0
round one. Is that
taking an
that?
Early lead? Taking an early lead.
Early lead. All right, 1-0, mate.
Cool.
All right. I get to go first this time.
You go first this time, yeah?
I'll go first this time, right? Which means you should trump me because you should be on it. But I'm going to get this one out. Yeah. It's actually next on my list anyway, and I want to say it because, however small and silly it seems, I just think this is one of those things where if you don't do this, if you're working in the foundation phase or even in the YDP phase, the younger players that don't necessarily need to have a proper warm-up, then I think...
I knew this was coming.
We've said it a few times, but to me, it's the only way to start a session. So... start a session, small-sided games, free play. Ideally 2v2s, 3v3s, 4v4s. I think 3v3s, 4v4s is ideal because 2v2s is sometimes a bit too much hard work for the players to come along to straight away. So 3v3s, 4v4s, small-sided games, small goals either end, ideally one or two either end, so it makes it a bit different, maybe some score zones. But most importantly on this one, which is something I think that we've embraced, and I believe in this, is there's no bibs. You don't use bibs. So the players rock up, 5, 10, 15 of them, you get them out there, you put them in small-sided games, and they play against each other, playgroundy kind of style football, dribbles, dribble on, pass on, just play, little score zones, keep the ball rolling, and no bibs, because that encourages the players to have to scan, look, use names, rather than just look at a bib and make it easy for them. So that would be my top tip to a new coach. Trump that.
So that's hard. So that was on episode one. You kind of you
Was
massively
it?
big, yeah, massively
Was
picked that
it?
one up on episode one.
But I bet we
Rightly
didn't say
so.
about not having Bibso, did we? Or did we say
No,
about
you
having Bibso?
didn't. No, you
No.
didn't. No, you didn't. Although,
That's
to be honest,
balls.
I fast forward the bits that when you were talking on episode one, so I could
That's
only
why
got
I'm saying
the, I only got
it,
the, exactly.
yeah.
Oh, that it's free plays is a great one, right? It's an easy one as well. It's so easy. It's like there's no, you don't have to worry about trying to set practice up or do this. Just put out some small goals or at cones that they can dribble through or anything, and just let them play for 10 minutes or however long at the start of a session. It's just so easy, and you can start off with 2v1. You can start 3v2, 2v2, and then there's more players, they just join in. And then if you've got a lot of players, maybe have two pitches and get them on. It's just such an it's a great one. I knew you was going to say it. I didn't put it on my list because I knew you were going to
Oh
say it.
really? Oh, that's even
I left
smart
it on my
tactics.
list.
You really you've double thought this one up. Okay,
I want
fair
to
enough.
win.
I
I
didn't
want to
need one of
win.
yours either, that one. That's what I was hoping.
It's a really one. So here's a question for you then. So how do you on free play, how do you get the mix of fun element, so the social side of it, because they've just arrived, they're going to be talking, how was school today, this, that, and the other, this happened at school, or did you watch the football last night, and them playing kind of a serious football, a kind of reasonably high intensity, or do you not really bother, or do you just let them do it?
I think there's a bit of dialing up here, isn't there? So I would say, let's imagine your session starts, on the hour, and they turn up on the hour. We're quite lucky; most of the kids will come early for us, won't they? They're 5 cents for just doing that stuff anyway. But let's say they will come on the hour, or they start to come up on the hour. I would just let them go in that session, and I would certainly have 15 minutes or so allocated at the beginning of the session to free play. Now, if you've got less time, you might want to scale that down. But let's say we've got 10, 15 minutes. I would let them just join in and play. Now, we have our behaviors in place anyway, and about, high tempo, that kind of stuff. So I think kids kind of know to expect to play properly. Actually, if they don't, they probably won't get the ball anyway. But look, if they want to have a chat and they want a few minutes and they want to talk about what happened at school today, and you see more with the older ones, the under 14s will have a chat about the girls and whatever else, because that's their old thing, what's going on at school. But give them that first 5 minutes. Don't press too hard in the first five. But literally on 5 minutes, almost to the second. Right, guys, come, let's go and let's see a bit of that. Let's get that. And just positive, though, just nudging things on, not coaching, not interfering. Just if you need to pick the pace up a little bit, positive encouragement. Maybe show us what we did last week, guys. Show us a bit of that stuff. Can you see that? Can you do this? And then pick it up a little bit. So then you've definitely got at least 5, 10 minutes before you go into the next part of the session where it's kind of gone to the pace and tempo that you want. Also, that first 5 minutes, you can say, look, it doesn't matter how you play so much, but are you stretching out, getting yourselves loosed up, doing what's right for you, so you're ready, ready, ready. But certainly, you want the last 5 to 10 minutes of the free play to kind of be at a suitable tempo that you think's right with focus on the game. It's almost moving them out of kind of outside football stuff into kind of what I'm in training mode now.
And you and to be fair, you're very good at that. You're able to kind of get that, you get that across to the boys really well. How do you, so under 14s, how do you work it with the under 14s then? Because obviously at that age, under 11s, the age group we work on as well, they don't really need to stretch too much. They just kind of limber up a little bit and get into it. Under 14s, do you get them doing a bit of stretching when they arrive and then they go straight into free play? Is that how it work?
Yeah, so they're responsible for their own kind of pre-free play warm-up. There's no obligations during free play till they feel like they're ready to play.
Excellent.
So again, a lot of them will be there from 50 minutes before their session's supposed to start, just because the way it works with timings and getting them across to us. So a lot of them there are like, that time. So they'll have that, and I won't get involved at all. I'll just keep reminding them that, guys, don't stand still. Make sure you're stretching out. Make sure we're going to start in 3 minutes. We're going to start in 2 minutes. We're going to start in 1 minute. So they know. And then we get into the games. Players that turn up once free play started, we have a separate like little area. Get a ball. Get them going. If it's particularly cold like it has been, then I'll do something with them just quickly, just to get maybe 2 or 3 minutes of just like, star jumps running, getting the balls, just little things, but fun still, but just and then throw them into the session. But also saying to them, look, you play at the pace that's right for you and your body. If you need to take some time to move out or to stretch or whatever else, then do it. Don't you know your body better than I do? Do the right things. And I do think it's important they do warm up properly, especially at that age. But they're in different stages, right? Some have gone through puberty, and you can see there, and they definitely need to do that work and get loose. Others aren't quite there yet, and they probably still could play like they could have been 10, 11 years old. So it's different for different kids. But part of one of our behaviours is responsibility, and that's enough for them to show the responsibility. You get yourself ready for the games. We don't want hamstring injury or pulled groin muscle, things like that. So, take ownership and responsibility of that. And it's not an exact science, but yeah, we try and put it on the boys as much as possible, but also keeping an eye on it ourselves.
It's a good one. Free play is a good one. It's
All right.
I think the other interesting aspect, just quickly on it, is that you can also see in that in as free play is going on, you can see which boys are really up for it and which boys maybe they're still on school mode or they're still half asleep from them because you've got an early session. It's quite interesting to see,
If you
actually. And
just
then
observe,
you
right,
can, yeah, we just
as a
observe, and you
coach.
can then start to kind of add your input into for each boy, add it, help them along a little bit. It's quite,
You
it's,
definitely,
it
you
is.
get a sense who's up for it, don't you, that session or whatever else. Or sometimes that just gets them into it a little bit. And the other thing that I think that you do really well on it on the free play is you have very tight space with very high numbers, which I think is really good because actually it's amazing what you see then. Like you'll have a tiny space to play 5v5 and with the boys, and we did something similar for the first time on Thursday, and it worked really, really well. I kind of almost give them too much space sometimes because I want to have lots of successes. But I think as coaches, be brave, you know, mix up your sizes you're going to use and the goals you're going to use, and you might be just surprised how small you can play a little 5v5 with their small goals and see the quality. So again, it's a good opportunity just to try little things out and have little challenges. It's still football, but it's a bit different. All right,
Well,
come on in.
that is a real, that's a real challenge, that one. That's a big hitter you pulled out there. So I was trying to think of one that could be broadly aligned to this, but it's not easy. And maybe I'll leave a couple of my bigger ones in the bag for later when I go first.
I'm not gonna
But
win, am I?
the one I'm going to use here, and some of the ones I've got here actually are more targeted at the foundation phase or the beginning of youth development phase, but this one definitely is a younger age group one. And it's staying on the ball. I know obviously there's a lot of discussion around this. There's a lot of people that are pro staying on the ball. And obviously it's a big FA initiative. And there are some people that don't believe necessarily that that's the right thing to do at a younger age. They need to be learning to pass and things like that. But I think staying on a ball, and this is probably where my mindset's changed a little bit actually from for the younger age groups, is I think it's really important. And I think we started to see the benefits, or we see the benefits of that with the under 11 team we've got now. So when you had them under sixes, under sevens, even under eights, I guess it was really a real focus of staying on the ball, not just dribbling, dribble, dribble, dribble. It was if when you've got and playing 5v5 and even the small side of games, you've done a lot of 1v1s, a lot of v2v2s, a lot of 3v3s, that they create lots of 1v1 kind of type situations where you're going to stay on the ball. And I just think it's so important because you just not just because it builds up that confidence or your kind of technical ability to go around players at 1v1, but it allows you to deal with the ball in tight situations. And when you get to the bigger formats like 9 and 11s, you're having to deal with the ball in, I know it's a bigger pitch, but the players get bigger and you're dealing with the ball in tight situations. And doing that at such a young age, you kind of become not natural, but it becomes a lot easier for you. You don't panic, you relax, you're able to use your body properly when you need to protect. You're able to hide it and use your skills, even if it's just a little bit of a skill to make a pass, not necessarily to go around a player, just to kind of be unpredictable and make a pass. I think it's really important, especially obviously in those very young ages, that's done just to create players or boys and girls that are comfortable of dealing with the ball in tight situations. I just think it's a real important one.
I'm not going to win, am I? Let's put it this way. But
I don't
look, no.
know.
It's, how do you argue against standing ball? Okay, I'm going to argue against it. Let me find a challenge then. So this is the argument that I hear about against standing ball, and I don't think anyone's going to say that the priority shouldn't be in the foundation phase for to maximize touches individually the ball. I think, you know, that's got to be right. Surely, you know, my initial issue with it was if it is just stay on the ball, then what you see, especially at under five, six, sevens, is you see heads down, looking at the ball, just beating legs, you know. Now that's not a bad thing in itself, but that means there's hardly any decisions being made outside of just what should I do with the ball. So there's no scanning happening, or maybe little bits of words, but they don't even scan for space. They're just trying to beat the next set of legs, you know. Now that there's some great skills in that, and that's a great skill to have that definitely can transfer up through the age groups. But so the argument I've heard here, and I think this has got a place at least to be listened to, is what if you let's go completely opposite, and let's say, okay, you don't you, the message was be a super passer. a super receiver and passer. You know, imagine being an absolutely outstanding. I can receive, manipulate, and move the ball with passing as good as Messi can on the ball with his skills. I'm like, well, hold on a minute. That's not a bad skill to have either, is it? That's pretty good, actually. If I'm really good at receiving and passing, you know, is that as important, or could it be as important as maybe beating players? Because actually, not only, bear in mind, it's not just the technical skill itself of doing it, I'm also, by doing that, I'm going to have my head up, scan, see pictures, understand movement, think about weights and angles, distance, that kind of stuff. So it isn't just the ability to receive and pass the ball in different passing lanes, which I could do unopposed, but actually the whole picture comes into play then. Now, look, I'm saying that being fully aware that I still believe the priority is stay on the ball. But if it's just stay on the ball and that, then actually, are we missing out a whole other skill set that players could benefit from having as well?
Yeah, and I think it's a good argument, definitely a good argument.
And is it a question of priorities? Is it a question, like, it's not one or the other, right? You're not going to just have stay on the ball, just pass ball, right? That's not what we're saying either. So it's a question of, well, actually, what we'd say is, look, maybe 75% of the time you want to be staying on the ball, and 25% of the time maybe you're going to be looking, not exactly, but as a rough guidance to your sessions, thinking, okay, can you throw in some of this? Maybe like every third week you do a bit more of a passing practice. I don't know. But there's a way in which you might get some balance, right? So you're not just doing one or the other, and you can keep those cognitive things working and that bigger picture stuff as well around football, which, you know, we want to help create or support clever players, don't we? Game intelligent players, right?
Yeah.
Not just super skillful ones, because super skill is not enough on its own, right? You need game intelligence as well, and that comes surely from having those visions and those pictures.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really good point. For me, staying on the ball isn't just dribbling just for the sake of dribbling. It's if you've got a 1v1, you can have a go. I guess you could argue if you've got 2v1, you could have a go at young, keep trying at a young age. And definitely, I think you want to bring in the element of passing, introducing passing. Maybe you have your back players would pass forward more so than when your forward players receive it. I think the argument is probably that the passing part can come in maybe at a little bit later age, once the boys or girls are really, really comfortable in 1v1 situations. That's when the kind of passing is, then where the education goes to the next level in terms of, all right, so when's the right time to dribble? When's the right time to pass? And even now with under 11s, my view is if they've got a one-on-one situation, they should try it and they should go for it. Not necessarily if you're a back player. I know there's argument to say, well, why not? But I think in the right areas of the pitch now, it's 9v9 football. We're no longer 5v5 football. They should have a go at that 1v1, and that, I think that's how you kind of create good quality chances.
I guess sometimes it's interpretation of these things, isn't it? Like, you hear these things, and it's how you interpret it in your own head to think, oh, is that quite right? And actually one person's interpretation is slightly different to another person's. I think that there's no way I would probably concede this, as in that's not a better argument, or sorry, a better tip than the small-sided game is free play to start with. However, yeah. I'm going to, on based on one word only. I think if it was prioritise staying on the ball, so prioritise it, make it the priority, but not the only thing, you know. So actually, in our session, let's encourage staying on the ball, you know. But actually, if you're tired and worn out and you've just beat three players, you know, that's the right time to share the ball. So it's the priority to stay on the ball, you know, that's your main focus. But actually, if you can't, or for whatever reason you're struggling, then find a different solution, which may well be passing out. So I think on a technicality, I can say,
That could be a draw. I'd go over a draw on this one, to be honest with you. I think free plays. I think we can have a half.
I'll take a point on this one. I'll take that one. I'm taking the point then. Is that all right? So we'll take a point. So okay, for starting with free play and prioritising staying on the ball, particularly the foundation phase, we're going to say that's a 1-1.
Yes.
Score draw.
I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take
all right,
that.
I'm happy with that as well.
So I'm all still right. Winning though, right? I'm 2-1 up.
You're still winning, but the power of editing, I'm sure I can sort all this out at the end, so don't worry about that.
All right.
Go on, your turn to... The second person should win, shouldn't they? Should be better chance. But go on, you go first, and I'll see if I can find something that's better. I'm going to start making a few things up here, I think.
Okay. Again, this one's a little bit targeted at the younger age groups, but this is... And I've got these as separate items, but I'm going to put them together because I think they're linked, really.
Is that in the rules? Is that allowed? Is that...
Yeah, I'm just making up as I go along, like pretty much like my coaching, to be honest. Actually, can you edit that?
It's not funny with this game.
Can you edit that bit out? I'm trying to get on your A for B. Anyway, this stuff. Equal game time and positional rotation, or rotating positions, maybe is a better way of saying it. So this is really targeted at the younger age groups and potentially into your youth development phase as well. And again, I think this is a big one. And I'll be honest, very few teams from my experience follow this. And I'll also be honest, I'm really shocked this isn't something that the FA push more on foundation phase coaches. Really surprised. I know staying on the ball is a real big piece, but I think this is equally as important. Equal game time for all players, whoever they are, and rotating positions. And that includes the goalkeeper and your outfield players. So I think even for the younger age groups, under sevens, under eights, maybe you don't even have, well, certainly for the current under 11s, we didn't have a goalkeeper, right? We just rotated players in. And I think that, you rotated the boys in. And I think it's just a huge benefit. So everyone got equal game time. Everyone played different positions. And obviously 5v5, there's not a lot of positions. You've got goalkeeper, you've got back players, you've got forward players. I guess you've got to tweak on the formation, depending on your formation. And you've got left and right. So if you're a left-footed player, you play on the right-hand side. If you're a right-footed player, you play on the left. If you're maybe at your younger age, look a bit more stronger at the back, you still play forward regardless. And if you're maybe very, very good on the ball, you play at the back as well as forward. And then everyone rotates in goal, takes the quarter in goal. I think it's just like the benefits that we're seeing now with the under-11s. I keep coming back to that team because that's obviously the experience that we've had. It's just huge, right? You see that even now at nine aside, we're able to rotate the boys around different positions and remain very competitive. And then there's probably a handful of boys that could probably play every position. There's probably at least two or three boys that could play every position. Maybe not goalkeeper now, because it's a big goal. And we're not a big team, but they could play in at the back. They could play centre midfield. They could play as white wing backs. They could play as forward players. They could play as cams. Whatever your formation is, they would fit in. And I think it's just really, really important one.
I think there's a danger when we talk about equal game time and rotation that people think it's the right thing to do because it's the right thing to do, you know, as in it's just the nice thing to do. It's the right thing to do. And there's an argument for that, but let's be perfectly clear. I support that point fully, but not because it's the right thing to do, because it's the best thing to do for the players. It helps them become better players, doesn't it? So my two questions for you is, what benefits have you seen? Just quick, kind of 30-second answers, really. But what benefits have you seen from rotating players and giving equal game time? And second question is, why don't more coach, what's the barrier to other coaches doing this, and what gets in the way of that thing for other coaches? So the first one is, what benefits have you seen? Second one is, what barriers might get in the way for other coaches?
Can I take the second question first?
Go on, barriers first. Go on, what gets in the way?
The results over development gets in the way, 100%. I think they want to win the games, right? And I think if you don't start doing this from the very beginning, under sixes or under sevens, I think it's hard to bring in as they get older. And it definitely makes you less competitive. And we know that, certainly from our experience, that pretty much every team you play...
In that moment, you mean? In that game, it's less competitive, right? In that moment of doing those changes, it can sometimes, you know, switching a strong player out of a different position might make you less competitive in that moment, in that particular game.
Yeah, So if you take
not
the
overall,
example,
not broadly.
No, not overall, no. But in that game, it makes you less. It will make you less competitive. A high chance of being less competitive. So if you take, for example, you might have a boy that scores you 30, 40 goals under sevens or whatever it is. And when they're not playing up front or as a forward player, maybe you don't score as many goals, right? And then that probably influences coaches thinking 100%, I think. But on the other hand, so the benefits you see, I think one, by the way, I think it is the right thing to do, as you say. I know it's not all about that, but it's definitely the right thing to do. It's definitely the right thing in terms of giving all of the players an opportunity to score goals, all the boys and girls an opportunity to defend and things like that, play those different positions. So definitely the right thing to do. But the benefits I just think that you see as they go through the ability to play in different positions, and you just got kind of fungible players that can play at the back. So, for example, as you become more structured, and under 11s, we started to be a little bit more structured, but not fully there. We still rotate positions. But it just means that if you haven't got, say, you don't have your normal defender there, one of the boys can fits in, and it's not a problem. And you create all round players that are able to defend and attack, play in midfield. And it also gives those players an option as they get older. Actually, they're not fixed in terms of you're going to be a defender. It's up to them as they go through, they get to choose. Actually, I want to be an attacker in when I get to under 12s, when it gets competitive, I want to be a forward player. And they've had that opportunity to prove that they can be a forward player.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know if you'd like to put two together like that, but you've done it anyway, haven't you, now? So we've got to swallow the fact you put two in there.
Told you, I'm just making up as I go along, didn't I?
No, look, obviously, a great top tip for a new coach, you know. And I think one of the issues the coaches have with doing this is sometimes how they start off from the outset. And it's so important that when you're putting your teams together, that you think about, okay, what, you know, are they close in their combined ability? Do you know what I mean? So you haven't got someone who's super strong or someone who's off the pace, if you've got that luxury, right? We have a streaming regime, I guess is the word at our club. So we've got an A, B, and a C, a red, white, and blue team. So you can stream, and that's there for a benefit. It's not there as a punishment. The C team's not a punishment. You know, the B's not a punishment. The A team's not a prize. It's where you are in that moment of time on your football journey. If you stream properly and you do that right, then there should be some little overlaps there so players can move as they need to, hopefully upstream rather than downstream as much as possible. But that, you know, both ways are possible. But I think if you get that right, and like you're saying, you set the principles in place early with the parents and everybody else, then actually this thing's a lot easier to do. If you don't do that, then it's so much harder because, you know, you might have just players that are particularly strong in one area and really struggle completely in other areas, or don't want to take their turn in goal, or, you know, when they're off the pitch, it's so skewed because they're so strong and dominant. You know, I guess it's not always easy to have a setup like that. You probably need the numbers to make that work. But yeah, there's obviously challenges. All right, I've got to pick one to go against it then, haven't I?
It's got to
All
be a
right.
good one.
It has got to be good. But, and I'm going to throw this out because I think this is important. Okay. I don't know it's going to be your one, but we've witnessed this, good, bad, and indifferent. So I'll be interested to know where you land, where we think on this one. Okay. So I think a top tip for coaches, and I think this is up there with one of the most important things you could have for you and your players, is all about ball rolling time and maximizing ball rolling time. So, you know, it's amazing how many coaching sessions I watch from really, really good coaches that professional clubs, academies, all sorts of things, where they will literally have, genuinely, they'll have 10-minute interventions, like 10-minute stop and talk chats with the players. And then they'll go and have a drinks break for 5 minutes and then play for 6 minutes and do the same thing again.
I've got my head in my hands, quite literally, because
But
I know what you're talking about here.
We've
So,
seen it, and it's not like,
yeah.
I just don't understand it. And you see players, and they're picking the black bits up, they're not listening, they're disengaged in the session, you know, they're a bit bored, and they go and play 5 minutes, then it stops again, you know. So that ball rolling time is so important. How you manage your interventions and how you talk to the players collectively individually and how you keep the intensity of this session up, like, I think it's fundamental because it all drives that environment, it all drives that learning, it drives the engagement, and it drives them wanting to come back and be part of that session again the next week rather than having to fight them to go there because they're a bit bored. If you've got two tips, I'd say around that is, number one, if you're having a drinks break, do the talk at the same time. Drink and talk at the same time. So don't do the talk for 5 minutes, then have a 5 minute drinks break. Put it together in one. You have the drinks, let them drink while you're talking to them. Let's go to the group and chat and drink at the same time. And number two, I think that if you're talking for probably more than 3 minutes, something's not quite right. Either the game you're trying to explain is too complicated, or it's not getting through. I think 2 minutes is almost your max, but 3 minutes is more than enough time. If you can't cover it all in 3 minutes, then maybe have a rethink or just get the game going. And if it's not working, that's okay too. And you can just tweak as you're moving along in the game a little bit. Let's just try it a little bit and see. And doing, I think, mostly for football you know, in a football environment is better than talking, generally speaking. And you want to do a bit of both, I'm sure. But actually just getting out and doing it and getting the games going and seeing them and working through the games as they're going live is probably better than trying to explain everything out in full detail, then putting it out there, then trying to get it going, you know, just get the game going. And, you know, and actually, I speak too fast anyway, but by giving quick instructions and doing it, it's a challenge that the kids have got to think fast, react fast, and the kind of things that happen in a game, right? You've got 0.6 of a second to have a conscious thought. Most interactions in football are 0.4 of a second. So it's always already too quick. So the more you can get players having to think and be sharp and struggle with the instructions a little bit, that's okay too, because that's all part of the learning. But that ball rolling time, and, you know, literally I'm gobsmacked by sometimes how much time gets taken up in interventions and non-ball rolling time in some of the sessions that we observe.
Yeah, especially when it's freezing cold as well, by the way. It's just incredible.
Definitely. Exactly. The environment, again, you know, it almost, you don't need to stop at all. We did a session last night. I'd be surprised if we stopped for 3 minutes in a 90-minute session last night. You know, minute here, you know, for the boys just to get a quick drink, recharge, have a second, and we go again. It was too cold. You can't stop. You know, you've got to keep playing.
Yeah, it's a really good one. So this was on episode one as well. This is one of the 10 on
was
episode
it?
One.
We were
yeah,
good, was, yeah. weren't we? We were back in the day. What happened
ahead
to
of
us?
Ahead of, I don't know.
Okay, I thought
it was a coach, you should keep learning, but anyway.
So I actually
quoted on episode one that in my, as part of my level two assessment, the FA person who was there, they measured my kind of ball rolling time.
Did
and it
they?
Was seven, yeah, and it was 79%.
What was their recommendation?
I thought it was over 80% was the target ball rolling time.
That's why you failed.
Well, no, I didn't fail, just to be clear, I passed.
1%.
And I was quite happy with 79%, but thinking back, really, 79% is not brilliant, right? That's still quite a lot of downtime.
In a 90-minute session, you'll get a math. See, hold on a minute. So 6 minutes is 10%, right? In an hour.
Yeah.
In a 90-minute session,
you got 9 minutes.
18 minutes.
18 minutes out. Over 18 minutes out. Yeah.
I guess
yeah.
that's not too bad if you think a little, you know, if you're breaking up three breaks of 5 minutes and the odd minute here and there, I guess that's not too bad. But you wouldn't want any less than that, would you?
No, I don't think so, no. Yeah, and I think there's little, as you said, the little tips around when they're having drinks, have the chat with them. I think having your session set up ready to go, getting there early, setting the session up ready to go, have the as much of it set up as you can. If you've got little pitches, have little pitches within a big pitch so you can just switch out, put your cones up and go into the next game. You don't have to then go and put all the cones down. I think as much of that as you can do. And having it comes back to the planning, right? Get the planning right, and even I draw up a little kind of diagram of what the pitches look like, so I know exactly when I get this is what it's going to be, what I'm going to be doing. I think there's a lot of little, and one of the things that you do really well actually is that a lot of the games you play are simple, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense.
I've got no chance, have I?
but they're simple and effective. Do you know what I mean? They're very.
Not the scoring systems, though, right?
Oh my god, the scoring systems! I hope that's not one of your top tips. God, you need a master's degree to just do your scoring systems. But anyway, that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
But I think the games you set up, they're quite repeatable games, and you have little tweaks on them. And I think and that saves time, and you've got names for them, and it saves time explaining it back over to the boys or the girls you've got, right? And again, yeah, that all helps towards ball rolling time. Let me ask you one question I've got for you though is which I always kind of struggle with ball rolling time. You could have a really high ball rolling time. You could have 80-90%, but actually the session may not be the most effective session. How do you? I guess maybe the intensity level's not there. So. It's, for me, it's not just the ball rolling time. It's also the quality of the session as well, and the intensity levels of the session. I think that's important. It's almost like quality ball rolling time. That's the way I kind of try to think about it.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because I just think you can't go too badly wrong if the ball's rolling, right? I think that's a good start, isn't it? It's a good start.
Definitely.
You know, so that is that going to fix everything? Of course it's not, you know. But actually, if the ball's in play 80+% of the time, I'd say 90, but 80+% of the time, then okay, there's football taking place, right? You know,
yep.
And then how do you know how intense the session's going to be or how good the players are, what they can do? And it's the ball's rolling, you know. So then you've got something to build on and work up, right? But without the ball rolling, it's really hard. How do you know how the behavior is going to come across or the core values are being followed or anything else? Because actually, you're more likely to see these things go the other way if you haven't got the ball rolling. For example, if your core value is respect, effort, and fun, well, how can they be respectful but effort and so fun if they're sitting and listening to you talk for 5 minutes? It's impossible, you know. It's just not possible. So then you say, oh, our values aren't, you know, these kids aren't very good at listening or whatever. Well, no, they're not. They come to play football, you know. So, you know, they're just a hard group to coach. No, they're not. You're not coaching them. You're talking to them, and that's not what they come to do. So, you're dead right. You know, you still want the quality in the session, you know, and you've got to have all the things there around this stuff. So nothing works in isolation. But I just think, you know, if you have the ball going most of the time straight away, that 90% kind of thing, you're in a good starting place then to either deliver the rest of the stuff you need to do or fix the other stuff that you need to do because you haven't got a great way yourself as a coach. But you don't know that until you've got that in place.
That's fair. Okay, where are we going on this one then?
We can't keep going 1-1s, can we? It's hard. I mean,
I'm happy to concede on this one. I think positional rotation equal game time is so important. It is very specific for the foundation phase, but I think it's really important for younger ages. But ball rolling time is across, I think, every age group, senior age group. So I'm happy to concede on that basis.
I'd rather have my kid in a session that's playing football 9% of the time and maybe not having so much rotation position wise everything else, but playing football, the one that's in a session where half the time they're standing around listening, but they're getting to do different things. So I'm going to take that win if that's all right then.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
All right. So 2-2 with two rounds to go.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
It's your turn, is it?
Is it my turn to go first?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to pull out a big gun here as a record. I don't think we've really carved this one. Well, no, actually, builds on what we said. So, okay, my one is adopt a games-based approach. Oh, look, it's for the face. It's a good one.
I was holding that one back for the last one.
Got to be in there. Okay, so let me be clear, because I know this gets some criticism all right, okay? So we don't just throw a ball in the middle, I get that, okay? But a games-based approach. So use incentives and conditions to encourage particular outcomes, you know? And create your own games or adapt to other ones where you see that are going to work for your group and your environment. So don't just go on to YouTube necessarily and just nick a practice you've seen there. Look at it and think, okay, can I tweak that and make it right for, you know, for my coaching style, for the players and everything else that I've got. But start with the game first. Start with the game, put some constraints or some incentives around that and put a theme around it and give it a name, you know, and then see how it goes. That doesn't mean then you can't break down that game and do some kind of practical kind of smaller version game of it if you need to, but actually start with the game, like, I guess a bit of a whole part whole, a whole, break it down, do the little bits, then back into maybe a game again. I just think that's to me, you know, especially for a new coach starting out, it's easier to coach. It's more fun to coach. The players enjoy it. And I think the alternatives aren't as good as that option.
Yeah, this is going to be difficult to beat this one. Yeah.
You shouldn't give me the last point, should you? You see, like, you're
know,
too nice on 2-2.
I know. Can I go back now or not? Is it too late? So just tell me. So look, don't disagree with this one, though. And it's one that come up on episode one as well. It was one of the 10 in opposite episode one. But you can't disagree with this one. But what, how do you go about then? If you've got a theme for the session, I don't know, it could be, let's think about a theme that we could have. It could be something around how you play in possession. How do you then go about building your session out based on a game, using a games-based approach? So maybe some coaches for in possession would have passing drills, pass and moving type drills or exercises. How would you do that from a games-based approach?
Okay, yeah, good question. So this week, got to be creative. And I think actually this is easier than it sounds. So let's just say then it was a passing practice. So we want to encourage, we're going against everything we said here, but let's say we're working on an under-14s group and we want them to work clever together by passing the ball, right? So combining and working together. The way I would do that is I would think, right, let's take it when let's say we've got like roughly 14 kids, just roughly. So, you know, we're going to play a 7-7, right? Roughly. It doesn't matter the numbers. end up being odds. It makes no difference, really. But I would look at a game and think, okay, how can I create a game here that shines a light on passing, you know, that encourages passing, but doesn't insist upon it? So what I would probably do is something like this. I would say, look, again, every goal you score is 50 points. So no issues at all. Every goal is 50 points, maybe. But what we'll do, what we could do here is we could say that we add on 10 points for every positive, genuine build-up pass to that goal. You know, so actually, do you mean, like, it can't be just Mickey Mouse passing backwards. Well, that doesn't mean nothing. But if you're passing around to create a good opportunity to get the goal, then that goal could essentially be worth a lot more than 50 points, right? But any goal is 50. If I just take it on my own and run 4 or 5 to score, it's 50 points. So I'm not taking anything out of the game at all. But actually, if I combine clever 2 or 3 passes together to get that goal, then actually I'm adding on 30, 20, 30, 40 points. So that's a bit more. This is where my goal scoring always gets a bit more complicated, doesn't it?
The scoring. Yeah, I'm lost already, to be honest. But, yeah.
But the good thing about it is also, apart from 1 or 2 players that are switched on, you can usually manipulate a little bit as well to make it work for you, okay? But the players buy into it, you know, and suddenly they're like, actually, rather than me just running around 4 and doing that, if I just play a little 1-2 here, I'm going to get another 20 points for this goal. You know, and we spoke about the headband game quite a lot, but it's quite a good one in the sense of actually, do you know what I mean? When you encourage other players need to get, you know, you can only score 1 goal, but then you've got to help your teammates out a little bit, it stops that one person dominating. So now, headbands, we start playing clever together. You know, you could do a bonus points for any goal that involves a 1-2, any goals that involves a one touch finish that requires a pass and a finish, right? So there's ways to incentivize the game that just plant some of these things. You know, you're not over coaching, you're not necessarily telling what you're taking nothing out of the game at all, so the football is still happening as it would in any normal game. You might say in that situation, what we're going to use pass ons rather than maybe throw ons or dribble ons, just encourage one extra pass there a little bit. You know, you could say actually you've got to pass over the halfway line, but I don't necessarily like these things where it kind of becomes a bit false. There's nothing false about this. This is just encouraging them to think about, okay, can I get bonus points for passing, you know? And then they realize actually this works quite well and it suits me doing this rather than actually going on my own, maybe, you know, but taking nothing away. So it's incentive rather than a constraint. But that wouldn't be your whole session. You could still then, if you wanted to, break down that and have, so you could start off the free play, you could go into that kind of game, then you could have a breakout bit where you might split the group into two and do a smaller side of kind of passing practice, unopposed if you want, whatever you think is appropriate for you in the group, so they can fine tune their passing or range of passing, and then go back into a game again, you know, maybe with no constraints. And to me, it just feels like, you know, that's a fun session to be part of. We've worked on a theme, you know, the players understand the theme, will know what they've come to the session for and got better at, you know, and you're applying some seeds. One session is never going to solve anything, you know, but it's part of it all, you know. The game's got a name now, so when you go back and revisit it next time, we're going to play that passing for points game, wherever it is, you haven't got to explain the game, the players get it, and they're even better at it next time around.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can tweak that game as well, right? It could be passing for points, and I don't know, you could add in first time finish, or you could add in something, another element to it.
Different goals, different pitch size, cut the corners off. Yeah, there's loads of ways you could adapt it, you know. So, but the principle is the same when it's football, that, you know, high ball rolling time, high engagement, lots of fun. There's no negatives. It's all bonus and rewards. There's no negatives. You know, it's just extra stuff for embracing the theme of the session.
Lots of decision making as well involved in that brings out that game intelligence element that you rightly spoke about earlier when we were talking about staying on the ball.
That's you don't have to pass, right? And actually, if I was coaching that and I saw a kid play a pass for no reason at all, you'd be like, take your 50 points, don't get 60. What are you risking a 10-point pass for to go and get, you know, going? That's the moment to go and finish the shot off. But actually, there, you could have got a nice, easy 20 points by doing that and increase the score from a 50 to a 70 by just playing smart. So you're just getting them thinking, aren't you? Like you say, you're not telling them, but you're getting them thinking.
Yeah. So I would say this is something you're very good at, these making the games up, making these scoring systems up. This is definitely one of your strengths for sure.
I'm a useless technical coach. I need that.
I didn't say that. But, so two questions for you. One, would you class a rondo as a game? Would that be part of your games based approach? That's the first question. And then a second question. I know you know the answer to this, but I think it's a good discussion point. Out of possession. How do you bring in the out of possession into games-based approach? So those two questions.
Yeah. Okay. The rondo one, I guess there's people that are better in rondos than I am. So I think when we hear rondo, all of us kind of, I don't know, I often think like 5 players in a circle with 1 or 2 in the middle, potentially trying to get the ball down. Okay. Nothing. I think there's some value in that as a warm-up game and everything else. But I think for it to be classed as a game, if you like, I would think it has to be directional, has to be competitive, some kind of scoring system, you know, something like that. So I would say my version of a rondo, which is probably the very basic version of a rondo, wouldn't necessarily equate to being a game, if you like, in the sense of how I would see one. I still, we do run those. I think they've got a purpose. They can be used in different ways, and people that use them better than I do probably could make it into a games-based, you know, thing. So I'm sure, or a positional play game, so they can be used better for that. But I don't use them without. I kind of want the game to look like the game as much as it possibly can, you know. So we'll have, you know, so it's directional. It's often looking like a football pitch, you know. It might change size, might use the goals different, depends on what we've got keepers wise, but it's still very much like football. I think rondos often feel like a rondo. There's loads of value in them. I think I'm a fan. I don't use them as well as I could possibly use them, but I do. But I think I would see that almost maybe as the part practice. Potentially, you could use it in some ways in the middle bit rather than the actual scoring game bit. But probably better coaches than me could use a rondo as part of the actual game, probably, I would say.
Yep.
The other question I think is a really good question, because this is something that gets ignored. I haven't actually put this on mine as one of my tips. Maybe I should have done that. I should have done it actually, but we'll concede I didn't do that now. But coaching out of possession. I actually heard, I won't say it because it's not right to say it. We listen to podcasts and there's a couple that I really like. And one of the ones I really like, the guy that hosted, he actually made this comment that he said he went to an academy the other week and watched a session. They were coaching out of possession and he couldn't believe it. And he was surprised and was like questioning. And I couldn't believe he couldn't believe it. Now, this coach is much more experienced than I am, much more qualified than I am, much better podcast host than I am. He's got, you know, so I'm not judging, you know, maybe I'm missing something here. But I think it's a mistake not coaching out of possession. For a couple of reasons, we spoke about it before, but I'll mention it quickly. Like, I think you need to be good at being good without the ball as well with the ball, right? It shouldn't be a priority, definitely. But the ability to win a ball back and defend properly, individually and collectively, I think is a fundamental skill to football. You know, even at a young age, you know what I mean? Because it's just good to know how to win. We see so many decent kids that can't tackle properly. They stick legs out or they foul or don't tackle at all because they've never been shown how to do it. So from a practical point of view, I think you've got to coach out of possession. But the biggest benefit to coaching out of possession is if you can coach your team to be really good without the ball, guess what it makes the boys with the ball have to do in training? Yeah. Be even better with it. Because actually, if the players can defend properly against them, suddenly they've got to be better with their skills. So it drives on the in-possession stuff. And again, I see so many teams that think they're great grassroots football teams. And they're pretty good, to be fair. Because when they're in training sessions, they look great on the ball because they don't have to defend against each other. When they play against stronger teams that can defend properly, it all kind of falls apart. And the coach's like, oh, you were great on Saturday, why aren't you very good today? You're all lazy, you guys. You're not paying attention. You all look half asleep. No, they just the out-of-the-ball stuff hasn't been at the level it needs to be to encourage you on the ball stuff. So look, maybe I've got it wrong and I'm missing something, because like I said, the person I heard say this, I have a lot of admiration and respect for, and is a lot more experienced than I am, but I just don't see why you wouldn't coach out of position. Would I coach it every other week? No, I wouldn't. Would it be a priority? No, but I would certainly make sure that we've shined a line enough times in our curriculum so that I know that when my players are playing with the ball, they've got a very good challenge from the opposition who hasn't got the ball in our own training sessions. So there's no free rides.
Yep, I think it's good. And but the question: how do you bring it into a games-based approach?
How do you do it?
Okay. Because you're absolutely right in what you say. Because you do this very well, exactly. But you do this very well. The games you bring in, so.
We'll touch on it. So let's take a half term, 6 weeks. We'll touch on out possession two out of 6 weeks. Week two and week four is about possession. So we'll focus on dominating one run without the ball. So if you've got it, Mark, how do I stop you getting around me? Okay. Because actually, if I can do that really well, it makes you have to be better on the ball, right? And then week four, we'll look at actually as a team, how do we control a player as a team when the opposition have the ball? So so we talk about some of the principles. And then in the games, what we'll do is we'll do things like, it's mad. Like you'll say, so we'll play a 500 and out game. So me and you are on different teams. You've got 500. We've got 500 points each. Every shot on target is 50 points off your score. Every goal is 100 points off your score. And the first team to get down zero loses. So rather than actually a reward going up for incentivizing kind of ball striking and goals, we're trying to send your points go down for conceding shots on target and goals. So it makes you defend a bit better and want to stop the desire to stop things from happening. It's really mad how it works, but it's that psychological way of spinning the scoring around. And suddenly the players, especially gets to like 100 to 150, you know, they literally is one goal in it kind of thing. And they've got to stop every shot, and then they're blocking shots, they're pressing quick, you know, they're doing all these things. And the scoring's driven that. we will have done a practice around it. So we'll do a smaller version of the game. We'll do some things where, you know, some 1v1, but we'll reward the player that can win the ball back rather than the player that can get the ball and score the goal. So we'll just shine a light on the other side of that game. You're kind of mirroring what you might do in the first week with dominating with the ball, or playing clever together with the ball. You just switch it around. It's not that hard. I always dread those weeks thinking the boys are going to hate it because it's the dirty side of the game and whatever else, but they don't. It's all right. And what it fundamentally does do, it drives up the in possession stuff because we're good without the ball. The boys have to be even better with the ball.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got principles that go behind it as well in terms of protect, press, cover, protect, that kind of thing as well, which you build on. So it's not just going into the game, as you say, you have those practices and principles behind it. So
and we use the same common language and those common words in the game. It's harder than the podcast to get it all, but if you have the principles there, then you can work on that and you can see it. And again, not one session, but over time, suddenly the players start doing these things and it works well.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a good point you make about being out of possession. Sometimes you have that as a coach, you view that it's harder to coach, or the boys or girls you're coaching won't enjoy it. But if you're using a games-based approach, most of the time, if they're playing football and you fundamentally got it wrong with the game, they're going to enjoy it, right? So, okay. All right. Yeah, I don't think I can beat this one, to be honest. I'm gonna concede it, but I've got one that's linked to this. So I had games-based approach, and I was saving it for the last one.
Get in there.
But so one of the other ones I had was playing different formats. So this is kind of a little bit linked to games-based approach. But so when I mean playing different formats, so obviously you've got the standard formats that we play. So we play 5-a-side at the moment for under 6, 7, and 8s. We play 7-a-side for 9s and 10s. We go 9-a-side at 11s and 12s, and then 13 up, it's 11-a-side. And I think the pitch dimensions change and the ball size changes and things like that. I think that playing different formats is really, really important, especially as your players get older. So as the boys and girls get older and they move to a bigger format, I think still playing 3v3s, 4v4s, 5v5s, playing on small pitches, having your 1v1s, your 2v2. I just think all of these things are really, really important. So you're not just focused on the bigger pitches. And I think that we had a game on Saturday with the under 11s. We played an 8v8 on a 7-a-side pitch. And I thought it was really, really good, actually. I know it's still quite a big format, but it was slightly different because it was a much narrower pitch, much shorter pitch. So there wasn't as much space on the pitch. We used the 9v9 rules. So there was no retreats. You didn't have to retreat. We had kind of real blatant offsides that the coaches managed. So it made it really, really tight. And it gave the boys something completely different to think about. And then in training, we do a lot of stuff around 2v2s, less 1v1s at this age, but we do a lot of 2v2s, a lot of 3v3s, and obviously 5v5, 6v6, depending on the numbers we got. I just think it's really important that regardless of the age, they're playing those different formats and different pitch sizes, being under pressure on a small pitch with a lot of players rather than, and I think it makes it easier when they go to the bigger format of 9v9. They've got a bit more space, a bit more time. It makes it a little bit kind of easier for them. So I think it's a really important that the coaches are using those different formats, both in training and for matches. If you can find a like-minded coach, instead of playing a 9v9, play 2 5v5s or play 3 3v3s and just move the boys around the pitches. In fact, I recently, both of our sons play at a paid for kind of academy, and they had a game against another team, and it was really well done. They had 2 3v3 set up and a 5v5 set up. They had the 2 3v3s, one had small goals, the other pitch had big goals and with goalkeepers, so one of your three was a goalkeeper. It just makes the boys and girls think about it differently, understanding space differently and time and things like that, movement. I think it's a big one, maybe not quite as important as games-based approach, but I think it's linked and I think it's important.
Do you think that playing 5-a-side, say under 11s, 12s football would transfer to playing 11 aside.
I think there'll be...
I'm trying to work out why people don't do it, I guess. I'm thinking, the coaching argument, you know, what's the point of playing 5-a-side? My kids play 11-a-side, so that's not going to help me.
Yeah, there's definitely elements that do. So dealing with the ball in tight situations, that kind of stuff, and in much more tight situations, that definitely plays out. You could have one, if you've got principles of play, maybe moving the ball quick, and when you've got a smaller pitch, you have to move it a bit quicker because there's more players on there and you have less time. So I definitely think you can use it for the bigger formats. I think perhaps coaches don't do it as much. Maybe it's a little bit harder to manage, harder to find like-minded coaches to play against, or teams to play against. Maybe that's a reason for why they don't do it. But for me, it's just creating that whole different environment for the kids when they're playing.
I would say that 80% of small-sided games transfers into the bigger format, doesn't it? You know, 20% doesn't. You know, you can't get long passes, or there's certain things that ain't going to transfer across, right? That's not going to happen. And certain maybe passing angles and ways of playing. But actually, I think 80% does. And I think 8%, maybe half of that is like almost twice as beneficial as playing that same 11-a-side game, right? So, you're not going to say it's exactly 100% better than playing 11-a-side, but some of it probably is twice as good as playing 11-a-side. Some of it you get nothing out of, right? I just don't know whether coaches buy into that enough than they should do. I agree with you. I think it's fantastic. It was great, the 8v8 game you played, to actually more players on a smaller pitch. You know, it's not all about having less players on a bigger pitch. It's just different challenges, right? And presents different problems. And also, I think a lot of these players play a lot of football, right? If they're just playing the same stuff with the same things, you know, it just gets a bit different. And even on Saturday, the boys probably didn't even know as much about it being that different. It was just a game, right? But it was different. And it hasn't got to be explained to them. They would have just enjoyed having a different challenge. They definitely did. And I think that helped a lot on Sunday's game, funnily enough, because I think it did make... Sunday was slightly tougher opposition, I think, to be fair. They weren't bad on Saturday. Sunday was slightly tougher because it was a slightly bigger pitch and a bit more space. They were able to do well against them.
Yeah, definitely. And you've also got the other argument on these smaller games. You have a lot more touches, a lot more shots, a lot more 1v1 kind of interaction, a lot more kind of the physical side of it, using your body as well. So yeah.
What would you, if you were the FA then, what would you, I mean, it's funny, it wasn't that long ago when the first formations were 7-a-side, right? Starting formation was 7-a-side. I mean, it wasn't long ago we were playing 11-a-side as under five. What would you have if you were going to have the age groups and the formations? What would you start off and what would you work through?
I think I'd probably go lower for the younger ones. Maybe I wouldn't have goalkeepers. I'd probably have 3v3s for sixes and sevens, maybe go 5v5, eights and nines, sevens, tens and under tens, under 11s, and then build up that way. I think maybe it's not an easy one, because I do think the formats work quite well. Like when we first moved to 9-a-side, I remember talking about it last season. It was like, God, they seem so young to be going on such a big pitch, but they just adjust. They do adjust to it very quickly, right? And all of a sudden, you can't imagine them playing 7v7 every week. It's like that's a really small pitch. But I think there'd be a lot of benefits if they did stay smaller for at least another season and then go to the bigger format. And certainly time you get to under 12s and obviously the under 13s, the boys are big, right? And they're starting to fill out the pitches. So you probably do need it for the matches. But I think maybe an extra, I'd probably bring in smaller formats for the younger age groups, for the real young ones, under six and sevens, even 2v2s. It's just that it's difficult to manage, isn't it, in terms of space and pitches and things like that. There's a lot more emphasis on the coaches to set up the pitches, because everything that's marked out is either 5, 7, or 9 at the moment. So it would be a big change. But I think for me, having smaller for longer would be better.
And you make the point about the academies. I mean, I think a lot of these players that we have will not be in the academy system, right? A lot of our players aren't, and you know, especially the ones that work in the grassroots space with grassroots clubs, you know, and they might have aspirations to go and want to work in play in academy football, and the coach might want them to play in academy football, but the academies do this stuff. So as grassroots coach, what you can do, you're not wedded to any format. Okay, you might be by your Sunday league or your Saturday league. That might be the one time where you've got to do what the league says. Okay, but outside of that, you can do what you want to do. And I think, you know, if academies are doing this, they're doing it for a reason, right? So as coaches, like you say, find someone like-minded, embrace it, and just do something different on the Saturday training rather than that. Get a game and just play some 3v3s, 5v5s, or mix things up, or at least all part of that, and then go into a big game if you want to. But don't feel like you can't do it, because academies are doing it and they're doing it for a reason, right? It must be beneficial.
Yeah, exactly. And the other angle to this is futsal, right? That's the other, we haven't mentioned futsal here. That's part of this different format. And I'm not an expert on futsal. We've done it with the boys. We entered in those leagues. But in fact, one of the best things for the current under 11s, and I think you did kind of indoor futsal, or you did futsal with them, I think under 7s, it was a tiny little hall, wasn't it? It wasn't one of these big gyms on a proper futsal pitch. It was a small hall. And you were playing, I think, 4v4 in there, and it wasn't 100% futsal rules, but you used the futsal rules that you thought was best for the boys for that group. And I think that was one of the best things for them, actually, because it was so many touches in such a small pitch and so much physical kind of contact 1v1. So I thought it was really, really good for them.
And different again, right? Wasn't it? It was football, but it was a different type of football, wasn't it? So part of their football diet, it was just a bit different to the rest of the week and what they were doing elsewhere. So they didn't get bored of it. Those sessions worked well.
Definitely.
All right.
And it was freezing cold outside, so it helped.
Yeah. Well, for us as well. Yeah. So what have we got? Games-based approach up against different formats. Well, look, I'm happy. You were generous last time, and I think I could argue my case this one, but to keep it interesting for the last round, should we go 1-1 on that one?
All right, fair enough. Yeah. What does that make it? I'll take that.
3-3 with a round to play.
Okay, all right. So I need to think about where I'm going now. I've got my list, I'm all over the place. Right.
I've gone quite big already, so you're probably going to be all right. I've got a couple, though, but go on.
So I'm down to three or four big ones. I'm going to tell you what the three or four are, because otherwise I'll tell you what we'll do.
If it's okay, pick one and we'll do that. Yep. And then what to finish off with, we'll just whiz through the ones we didn't get a chance to mention, so they can have an honorably mentioned kind of thing at the end. I'll let you cover them. You'll definitely get a chance to talk about them.
But... All right. Okay. I'm going, again, a little bit focused at younger age groups, but I'm going result doesn't matter.
Okay. Yep. I'm glad you said winning doesn't matter, but well done. Yeah, result doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay. Why doesn't it? What do you mean by that? And why doesn't it?
So, I think what we've found in a lot of games we played, that coaches are very focused on winning, and it's something we've spoken about already. We're very results focused, so they won't rotate positions. The strongest player will play virtually the whole game. If they come off and they concede a goal, they'll be back on straight away. So they're really focused on the result, whereas I think both of us actually are more focused, A, doing things the right way, and B, focused on long-term player development. So taking the whole part of the result out of the discussion and being focused on just on what the boys are doing and how they're playing. And even with under 11s now, that's what we talk about, right? We talk about the result doesn't matter. What's the most important thing? And the boys would tell us it's about how they play, how hard they're competing, levels of intensity and things like that. So I think as a headline, result doesn't matter is really, really important. I think that as coaches, you want to win. And I think you want your players to want to win, but it's not about the result. It's about how they play and how they carry themselves on the pitch. And even after the game in the tournaments that we played where the boys have been fairly successful as a team and they've won in a tournament, the first thing they are, instead of celebrating, they're over shaking the opposition hand, right? And I think that's just the way they carry themselves is really, really important, above and beyond the kind of result, for me anyway. I think it's really, really important. Result doesn't matter.
Like it. What's the difference between result and winning? Why didn't you use the word winning doesn't matter?
Because I think there's different ways of winning. So I think you win by, for us, we win by competing on a level of 9 out of 10. We win by showing our principles of play in and out of possession. We win by making sure we carry ourselves on the pitch properly and after the game properly. That's how we win as a team. I do think that actually, if you get those things right, and I think if you get a lot of the aspects that we've spoken to in this podcast right, then you will have quite a team that wins games, to be honest with you. But yeah, that's how we win, is around other things apart from the result.
Yeah, awesome. Like, it's so, let's acknowledge, first of all, it's not easy doing this.
No.
I do get that, you know, and you know, I've never played one game where we don't want to win it. Right? That's true. Yeah, 100%. But
100%.
It's the question is,
and you feel disappointed sometimes. Just, can I just add, sorry to interrupt, you do, if you lose the game, sometimes you do feel, you look back and think, oh, we lost that game. It's not a question of we lost it, like, it's a question, actually, did I do something wrong as a coach? You do feel, it's actually reflection, you do feel a little bit like, oh, a bit kind of not like when you win it.
Look, I don't know any coaches that don't feel this way, and it doesn't mean more than it probably should do to them. That's part of why we're involved in this. That's the whole point about not taking it too seriously, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, number one, it won't mean anything long term. It is what it is. And actually, it's all learning, right? And it's all about, okay, things, if it was easy, you know, that wouldn't be fun. So it's supposed to, you need a few bumps, otherwise you'd get bored. You need the challenges to it. But I think the challenge here is about not wanting to, obviously you want to win, but if you can focus the winning on something else other than the result, well, that's best for the children, right? That's the first thing to say. Even though we know you want to get the result as well. But the question, I think, what differentiates coaches is how much they're prepared to do to sacrifice potentially player development, the environment and other things for a result. And I think that's the biggest differentiator between coaches. And I'm not saying anyone's perfect or not perfect, but there are certainly coaches out there that will shout at the ref nonstop, that will shout at their players nonstop, that will argue with the opposition coach nonstop, that will kick the ball long, will not rotate players, will do everything basically they can to manipulate the result, you know. And I don't think those things, you know, are conducive to a good learning environment and development environment for players. And other coaches, which will turn up and they'll try and be civil, they'll want this to be their players to be competitive, but they won't shout instructions, they won't berate the ref, they'll try and keep playing their football, they'll rotate, they'll do the right things. And you know, that's the point, isn't it? And now that second coach may well lose to that first coach, but actually, who really has won and lost in those situations, you know? And I think that's the gauge, isn't it? How much you're willing to sacrifice, you know, some of the making good choices for the players and the environment for a result.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, 100%.
So I'm going up against results, don't matter. All right, good. All right, well, we'll do our, we've got three or four left ourselves. We'll just go for those at the end just to get them out there at least. But I'm not going to go for one I thought was actually a bit bigger. I'm going to go for a slightly smaller one, but I think this is really important. So I've gone for ask the players. So okay. I would recommend a new coach, you know, as much as you possibly can, have the players involved in this decision-making process. So things like, you know, what kind of team do you want to be, you know, and what does that involve? You know, what do you want training to look like and how do we make it work for you? Are you enjoying this? You know, how was the session tonight? What could we do better? You know, in this game, what do you want to do? Do you want 50 points or do you want 100 points? Do you want this? Do you want get them involved in it? Actually go and think of a game, guys. You know, who's going to be your captain this week? And again, you did as well. You get the players involved in lots of these things, especially around those kind of decisions. And I think as coaches, sometimes we can underestimate just how smart the kids are at making good choices for themselves, often a lot better than I can make them, that's for sure. And it takes some of the pressure off. And also it gives you a better indication of what the players actually want and reminds you you're there for them. They're not there for you, you know. So just asking questions, keeping them involved, doing maybe end of season or term surveys, getting feedback, acknowledging the feedback, you know, and letting them know that you're there to support their journey and not the other way around. And I don't think coaches consciously don't get kids involved in their decision-making process. It's something I don't think we think about enough. And it just kind of, the season goes by and we, you know, we're on to the next thing. But they can give some really good suggestions. And if nothing else, at least you know where you stand with them about certain things.
Yeah. So is this, would you categorize this as player ownership as well? Was it different?
I think I would say it's in there. But the difference player ownership, I think that is their responsibility a little bit. So that's responsibility. That's on you. Do you mean that? I can't do so much with that. That's the question is on us. Okay. So what kind of team do you want to be? So yeah, I should tell us that, but then I've got to work with you on that. So I would say it's somewhere in between of like the coach taking control and the player taking full responsibility, the asking questions, but I think is somewhere in the middle a little bit where actually now we're working together to try and, you know, create the best possible environment and develop ourselves, but at least they're in that decision-making process, you know?
Yeah, it's a good way. And it's their team. I think you always capture that really well. It's their team. Give them that kind of input. And you can, as you say, you can do it simple in a lot of simple ways of doing it. Like we have, we let the captain choose his man of the match or player of the match, so give them that kind of ownership, and they have then have to explain why they chose that person. Things like in the game where, like, maybe you don't set out whether corners we have corners or whether you have throws, and the boys all of a sudden start shouting, "Have we got throws?" And you say, "It's up to you. What do you want?"
Yep.
And usually the team in possession will say, "We want to throw," and the other team won't, so it makes it difficult. But you do, you know what I mean? You just give them little bits of input, like at the end, do you want to do penalties? Do you want to do free kicks? Do you want to do this? You just kind of give them that input. I think it's a really important one. They feel integrated as part of the team and as part of the whole process. It's really, really important. And I guess that helps bringing them back every week and getting them their buy-in in terms of what you're doing. So,
I think it's so powerful, and there's so much life skill stuff in that as well. You know, it's not necessarily conscious thing, just subconsciously they feel like it's their session, it's for them, you know, they've got a voice, you know, it makes them bigger and more comfortable. And even the quieter kids now are getting their voice, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, look, we speak about this a lot as well. It's not just about coaching better football players, it's the coaching helping like be good young people, right? And, you know, if you give that responsibility and that opportunity to make decisions and be involved in that, well, you know, they've got to step up, they've got to think, they've got to think a bit of like you might think, and as a coach, I mean, there's just so much life skill stuff in that as well that, you know, it just helps. And if I think it's nice for a coach, you feel like you're working with them, and it's not all on you and your shoulders. You know, it's not all about you to deliver. It's about you working collectively with everyone, but especially the players, to create the best possible opportunities for them and the best possible environment, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you did. It's worth just adding, actually, in terms of Ask the Kids, you did a very good session with the under-11s a few weeks ago when, at the start of the session, after free play, obviously, at the start of the session, you kind of had a kind of 20 minutes of talking to them.
Intervention.
Intervention, yeah. No, we was in a dome. It was nice and warm, and you had a presentation, and you were asking them what kind of team they wanted to be, and then they had to think about it, and then they had to come back and present their kind of results and what these two options you'd given them looks like
and what that looks like, right? And perhaps what they have to do then to do it, and what being, again, your point, being honest and being clear. But it's fine, we want to be a winning team, but what does that mean then? What does that look like? You know what I mean? And if you, what does that mean from you guys, what you have to do and stuff? So, you know, I think that's about us facilitating those honest conversations. They're little, right? They're young, they're still 10, 11 years old, you know, so they want to play professional football and beat everyone else. But actually, okay, well, are you prepared to work as hard for that as you might need to do? And let's chat about that and what that looks like in practice. And we'll revisit again in 6 months' time and see where we're at.
Definitely. But the amazing thing about that actual session is their ability to kind of present back to the rest of the group. So I think we split them into two or three groups, and they all had a whiteboard, write down their ideas as a small group. And then they had to come back and present them back. And I think even the really shy boys, you saw that they stepped up and gave their input. And like, again, that's the whole life skills piece, right?
And to be fair, just to make a note, we did extend the session by half an hour. So it's a 2 hour session that week, and we kept it indoors. So we didn't lose any game time. So the ball rolling time.
Ball rolling time. Yeah. Exactly.
It wasn't a 20 minute intervention and no time. All right. Well, look, how do you separate results don't matter and asking the players, look, it's Christmas. Let's go. I'll tell you what we'll do. If you're happy with this, we'll go four all on the top chumps round. And then you can read, we'll read out two or three more just quickly. You got a couple of minutes to whiz through two or three of your top other ones. I'll do the same. And then we'll call out a final winner.
Okay, all right. I'll do mine quickly.
Yeah, go on. I might jump in with questions, but otherwise just whiz through them. A couple of minutes, whiz through what you think, what you don't want listeners not to have heard, you know?
Yep, definitely. So one that I kind of really wish I'd put in, but I didn't, was managing the parents, effective communication with the parents. I think that's so, so important. Bringing them on the journey with you.
Working with the parents, Mark.
Working with the parents, sorry, yes. I like managing the parents, to be honest with you. but working with the parents, really important. Have that relationship with them. Be upfront in terms of exactly what you're doing with their son or daughter, so they know. Be upfront in terms of things like equal game time, positional rotation, all those things that you're doing that perhaps maybe a little bit controversial for them, perhaps because it's impacting their son or daughter. Just take them on the journey with you. It's so, so important. And I think it also keeps that team dynamic going as one team. Obviously you need to make the decisions as a coach, which is what you think is right for the boys or girls. And sometimes you're not going to have every parent that is going to like it. But, I think if you're honest, upfront, have integrity and things, I think that, and you take them with you, I think that's a really a massive one.
Yeah,
which a lot of coaches get wrong, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you either shy away from it because you're a bit too intimidated, especially when you're a new coach, right? And I don't mean new as in young, but I mean as in you could be, you know, whatever age. But when you're new to it, you kind of get a bit, I think you can be a bit timid about it, or you try and overcorrect and you be a bit too kind of regimental about it. It's getting that balance right by kind of just saying, look, you know, I'm doing my best here. This is what I'm going to do, you know, share some ideas. And you don't want to open the door too much. Everyone wants to give all their feedback, but you want enough to be able to know that it can be a conversation if it needs to be. But be confident in your own judgments. If you've done your research and other stuff beforehand and you've done, you know, you can put yourself out there, and it won't be perfect first time, but you know, the worst thing you could do is not communicate, right? And not have that communication going with the parents.
The other two I've got is number one, the next one is principles of play. Have your defined principles of play. You probably got that one as well. Something that we've had, you're very good at this, but I've used them in the past but not been as well structured. This year we're very structured, and it's just, I think it's helped develop the boys' leaps and bounds. Even in a short period of time, they understand the kind of expectation of how we play and things like that. And you get that, you have their buy-in. I think as they get older, perhaps they might want to kind of own those principles of play more than they do at the moment. It's something we talk to them about. They understand it and things like that. But so important, like in possession, out of possession principles of play, really important. Referring to them each week, every week, building your training sessions around those principles of play, different elements of it. It's just, yeah, really important.
Very good. I couldn't argue. Yeah, I've got it as well. You're dead right. But yeah, I'm actually surprised we didn't both have that as one of our main ones, to be fair. But I'm glad we didn't, because it's massive, right? But it's like, well, actually it is. But there's other things actually that have to come to create that, right? To make that work. You've got principles and not the right environment or other things there, that's not going to support it. So the only thing I would say about principles of play is I wouldn't be too obsessive about in possession, out of possession, that kind of stuff. You're not Pep Guardiola necessarily. It's just about saying, okay, maybe it's just right. We want to kind of just, we want to have a good tempo to the way we play, or we want to be able to have a good work ethic. It could be real simple stuff, two or three things, depending on the age and stage of the players, you know, but just things that actually, right, we know when we're playing our football, these things that we want to see all the time, you know, this kind of way of playing, you know, an approach or a philosophy to how we want to play. And again, ideally, hopefully that's something the teams agree to and wants to do, because that's what they want, not what the coach has told them. So it hasn't got to be too technical and too detailed in and out position and transition, that kind of stuff. It can be, you know, maybe where the players are at, but it hasn't got to be. Just having an agreed way of how you might approach your football, you know, really helps then about how the sessions should look, right? Because that's, if it doesn't look like that, what's the point of doing it? Because we want to play that way on the Sundays or the Saturdays.
Definitely, yeah. And I think just as an example, I think we're consistent across under-11s, under-14s, or very similar. So we, in possession, they're quite simple. Make the pitch big, move the ball quickly, either dribbling or passing, and create and finish high-quality chances, right? It's just very simple. There's nothing too complex about it for the under-11s or under-14s to understand.
And the important thing about those things is obviously the question, why as well? Why do I want to do these things? Why? It's not just like, okay, the coach said this, let's do that then. Like, don't be arbitrary about it. Okay, but why is that important? And actually, I listened to a really good podcast in the week that was completely contradicting the whole concept to make the pitch big and stuff like that. And literally, the coach does, he's the guy that's at Brighton now, the manager's name. But his approach is completely different in the sense he makes the pitch small, he overloads in areas, he doesn't press. It's like, you get it. It's like, there's not one right answer here, you know, but what's right for your players and what do they want to do and why do they want to do it? Okay, let's make sure then what we're doing in practice looks a bit like that, right? Otherwise, what's the point, you know?
Yep, totally agree. I'll go to my last one.
Go on, yep.
I think wherever you can, it's not easy, but having an assistant or having co-coach or a mentor or someone that you can work with, bouncing ideas off, that can take the session for you, I think it's always good. And we're lucky with the under-11s that there's three of us, or three and a half of us actually, helping out, and we're
the half, you're in trouble.
We're able to, whereas you've got commitments to the under-14s, you're not there every week. When you're there, you're able to do a session, and when you're at matches, you're able to talk to the boys. I think it just adds, it's not the same voice. It's slightly different angles on things. The messaging is consistent. You see things because you're not there every week, or you like, if I give you an idea or the other guy who works with us an idea, he will come back with something else, a slight twist on it. So I think wherever you can is having someone to support you. And I know it's not easy, but it's trying to find that person who's as interested as you are.
Yeah. Well, you can't see it all, can you? Like game days, you miss so much. That's like watching the videos back. It's funny how much you miss now. Games are different on the video compared to what you see in practice. And obviously what you'll have seen is different to what I'd have seen and our interpretation of it and stuff. So it doesn't mean anyone's right or wrong, but when you discuss these things, you just start thinking, oh yeah, maybe that's right, or actually I didn't see that. And just doing the stuff, right? There's always a lot to do if you want to do it to a certain level. It's definitely, you know, yeah. So it's, help is always important.
Yes.
Well, mate, we've covered a lot of things. The only couple of things I'll add then, if that's okay, is we touched on it. Okay, I think actually video matches is actually quite good. I wasn't the biggest fan, but I've changed my mind on that a little bit. I think the danger is don't overanalyze it and don't start clipping things to players. That I think that's too much personally. But as a coach, I like to look back on the things. I have a little scoring mechanism that I use to assess what I've seen. And it's amazing how different it looks when I score compared to what I thought I'd seen. But more important than what I do is I look back over 5 or 6 games and then think, okay, where are the trends? You know, where are the things that I'm seeing? So we're focus on those as part of our session, so we can build it in at certain points. So if we're seeing things that maybe we're you know, there's high transitions, we're looking at the ball at a key moment, so we're playing in the same zone, we gain the ball in a little bit, and can we look at that a little bit, or individual stuff I can help players with. But I think don't look at one game at a time, look at least 4, 5, or 6 and look for trends more than anything else. But and don't overanalyze these things, like we said at the beginning, don't obsess with it too much.
Yeah, it can be dangerous, right? You can be dangerous, but yeah, it's like we're lucky we're able to video our games and watch them back. That just it's a real benefit.
And the last one then I've got is just keep learning. I think one of the dangers we make as coaches is we just stop. You know, you get, and it's hard, I know, because you get obsessed with it all, but you can easily suddenly stop learning. But you know, watching other sports, listening to other podcasts, not just ours, you know, books, courses, get a mentor like you mentioned, video yourself, all these things are just good for your development. I know we ask the players to get out of their comfort zone a little bit, but we need to as well, you know. And you know, just, you know, to reach out and in a calm way, have a break, like we said, but, you know, also, you know, don't get stale with it all, you know, keep yourself, you know, keep a little bit of stuff going in there and keeping your kind of powder dry.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that even the FA courses are good, and everyone has their different views on them, and I've got certain views on them. But without going into that, one of the big benefits is the networking opportunity. When you go on these courses, you get to meet different coaches and maybe build a relationship with them and maybe spend time with them and understand what they do. And I think that's the real benefit of those kind of courses, is who you meet on there and how you take that forward.
All right, top man. Well, I think there's at least, I don't know, there must be 15 tips in there somewhere. So some must be useful for some people. It's interesting then that a lot of them were similar to what we had in the episode one then, which, you know, I guess that's a good thing in many ways, but we've evolved a little bit in some of those things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What's the most fun thing about coaching then, Mark? Come on.
The most fun thing about
what do you enjoy the most about it?
Interaction with the players, the boys and the girls. That's what I love the most. As my wife always tells me. Exactly, yeah, winning. the interaction, as my wife always tells me, I'm very immature, so I fit in quite nicely with the under 11s. I just honestly,
they're growing past you, I think you have to go back to the under 7s, man, because these are growing past you now.
They're taller than me, yeah. And half of them are more smarter than me as well. But yeah, it's just that interaction, it's just the fun aspect of it, and helping them along. Not just as footballers, but as people as well. It's very rewarding, very, very privileged to be able to do it, I must say.
Top man. Well, look, I think in
yourself?
True Christmas.
How about yourself? Come on, how about yourself?
I guess for me, I like trying to create an environment which the kids want to come to for an hour and a half a week, where, you know, they have a laugh, they enjoy it, and they get better at stuff, you know. But that stuff is often football related, but it's also about actually leadership skills, communication skills, responsibility skills, ownership skills, you know, and just, you know, and I like that and being part of that. And it happens to be in a football environment because that's what I'm doing. But, you know, I'm certainly, I don't even see myself as a coach. I think I facilitate a half decent environment that has to be around football, you know, and some of those things are in there. And, you know, if they were just doing me, they'd probably be useless. But because it's me as part of a bigger package of stuff, I think it kind of works. It wouldn't be useless with me, they'd be fine, but they wouldn't get as much out of it as they might do otherwise. I think
go on.
Yeah, it's being part of the puzzle, isn't it? You know, having a place in it, not being all the answers, don't see myself as that any stretch. It's just been part of that thing, you know, in the most constructive way possible for the young ones. But look, it's not easy, right? And and for coaches getting involved in this, it's not easy. But you can make it easier for yourself by hopefully following some of these tips that we've shared for our own experiences and all things that we would have done complete opposite at some point, I'm sure, in our journeys, which is why we call them tips now, because we would have not done these things at some point. And you know, and I do think we practice most of the stuff we preach now, which is pretty good. I'd say virtually all of it. I don't think there's nothing on we stray away too much from. But there's always room to improve and keep working on. And I'm sure if we do the same thing next year, maybe as an update, we'd be interested to see if we get anything different to hit the list.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What's the score, by the way?
I was going to call it a draw, but do you know what? It's hard. Unless you want to claim the victory, I'm not giving you the victory, but I was going to happily concede a draw.
Yeah, concede a draw. I think you're lucky to take a draw. But anyway, I nearly had my shirt off running around the room because I thought you were going to concede winning, but it's way too cold at the moment. So
well, your rotation that. Equal playing time one. He built a foot. So yes, I definitely wouldn't take. I'm happy to share the win with you if you're happy to share that in the Christmas spirit. Yeah.
We'll take it. That's fine.
I can have a snowball now.
You can have a snowball now.
And a mince pie.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a quick hour, as usual, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely one of our hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. All right.
Thanks so much, mate. Really appreciate that. Look, we've got the 100th one that coming up soon, I think. If you're happy to come and do a 100th special, we'll pick something for that, if that's all right, as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And we haven't even caught up about how the coaching stuff's gone the journey, but we'll do that at some point in an episode not too far away. But I'm going to see you. I know I am, but for the podcast, mate, have a wonderful Christmas. Thank you for everything you do for the boys and the club and everything, and for the podcast and giving your time up whenever I ask you to jump on it. You always do, which is brilliant. And mostly, mate, thank you for today's episode, because some top tip trumps for listeners. Hopefully it was a bit of fun and something they'll get out of it.
No worries. And obviously, thanks for everything you do. And as I said to you before, you've taken the podcast to just a new level. It's
of loneliness.
Of loneliness, yeah. I don't think there's another honestly, I don't think there's another podcast on the market like this one.
Which probably for the best.
And I'm not saying it's you, it's the people you've had on there. But anyway.
I'm going to end that bit out, definitely. That won't make the podcast. All right, Mark. Happy Christmas, mate.
Brilliant. Happy Christmas.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.